Brave New World.
Hello and welcome to Brave New World programme. My name's John Harrison. Whilst the world's attention is absorbed by Syria, Islamic fundamentalism and the American presidential elections, something serious is taking place within the borders of Europe. Extreme nationalism in the form of right-wing organisations is on the rise. European mainstream political parties seem to be caught up in a catch-22 situation. On the one hand, they can be seen to be securitising the migrant crisis to perhaps justify their own existence. But in doing so, they're creating the political space for the existence of extreme right-wing parties. So, my question is, are we allowing politics that a few years ago would seem to be extreme to flourish because of the migrant crisis? Joining me to hopefully answer this question is Jean-Yves Camus, who is a political analyst and an associated research fellow at the Institute of Foreign Relations and Strategy in Paris. Jean-Yves is a graduate of political science from Sorbonne University in Paris. Welcome to the programme, Jean-Yves.
Hello.
Okay, the National Front Party in Paris are gaining support because of anti-immigration feelings in France. I don't think anybody can deny that. Is this not only preparing the way for a National Front government, but making their kind of politics more mainstream in France?
Well, most of the attention in the French media today focuses on the possibility that Marine Le Pen, the president of the National Front, can win the presidential election in 2017. Of course, that is very interesting and very worrying, but in my opinion, the most important effect of the rise of the National Front is not the National Front coming into power. I think this is not possible, at least for now. It's the fact that with the National Front as high as 28% of the national vote, the mainstream parties, of course, more or less obliged to switch their agenda according to what the National Front says and does. So, for example, on the topic of immigration and national identity, part of the mainstream conservative right is now trying to win back the voters who defected to the National Front, and in order to achieve that, they switch to a much more conservative, hardline agenda on immigration and the refugee crisis.
Yes.
The only problem is that this conservative party has been into power for years and was faced with the immigration problem and already with the situation in Syria and Libya, and that they did not do anything significant that would change the situation.
Yeah. So, in a way, you've already answered the question, and your answer, I believe, is saying, yes, you know, we are seeing the springing up of more right-wing policies as a reaction to the migrant crisis and the more left-wing, and don't forget that we have a socialist government in power in France, is adopting a more right-wing set of policies in reaction to the migrant crisis and in reaction to Le Pen's party.
Yes, but I wouldn't say exactly that.
Okay.
The Socialist Party is into power, and the Socialist Party is changing its policies on immigration simply because they have become more realistic. The attacks, the terror attacks in Paris in January and November 2015 came as quite a shock. And, of course, I remember when President Hollande and Prime Minister Manuel Valls arrived on the scene at the Charlie Hebdo shooting on January 7th. I mean, I was able to see on their face and in the way they spoke to the press, they had realized the magnitude of the event, and not only because it was a terrorist attack, but because probably they realized that they had to change their agenda, the traditional left-wing agenda on immigration. They suddenly realized that probably they hadn't taken as seriously as they would probably have needed the immigration and terrorist issues.
But they haven't changed their policies, have they?
They have changed their policies, but they have not adopted the National Front policy, because what the government says today in France is that in case someone who holds dual citizenship, let's say French and Algerian or Moroccan, commits a terror attack and is sentenced by a court, he or she will be stripped down of their French nationality. And, of course, this is something very new, but the National Front doesn't say that. Mm-hmm. The National Front says that all migrants should stop coming into France, and that those with a terrorist record and those with a criminal record, even if it's not terrorism, should be repatriated to their own country. Mm-hmm. But that's a totally different thing.
I agree with you. It's a totally different thing, but is it enough?
No, it's not enough. Because
it's not enough.
It's not enough because what we know from the opinion polls is that most voters for the National Front vote for this party for two reasons. The first one is that the National Front has never been into power, and it's the only significant French political party which has never been into power since 1981.
Yeah.
So what those people want is change. They really want a party that's not part of the political establishment. And second, they vote for the National Front because of the economic crisis, unemployment, and everything that goes along with liberal globalization. So unless the socialist government has significant results on such topics as unemployment and the economy, mm-hmm. I think that this will not solve the problem. People will continue, especially mm-hmm. in working in the middle class, mm-hmm. to vote for the National Front simply because they are desperate about their economic situation.
But you said at the beginning of the program that it's impossible that the National Front could come to power. Why do you think it's impossible, having said what you just said?
It's impossible at this stage because, first, we do not have proportional representation.
Mm.
So the National Front gets 28% of the national vote but has only two MPs. And the second point is that the National Front keeps on being stronger. It got 20% and 25% and 28%.
Mm-hmm.
And tomorrow, probably, they can get 30% or 32%. But they have no ally, no political party, no right-wing mainstream political party wants to get into some kind of a coalition with the National Front. And, of course, the National Front is alone.
Yeah.
And if it doesn't get into some kind of an alliance on the national or local level, it will simply not get the 50% of the vote necessary to win a majority.
So your system is like the British system, the first-past-the-post electoral system?
No, it's not first-past-the-post.
No.
We have two ballots, but without proportional representation.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's take a break.
Brave New World.
Welcome back to Brave New World. Today I'm talking to Jean-Yves Camus, who is a political analyst and an associated research fellow at the Institute of Foreign Relations and Strategy in Paris, about the growth of extreme nationalism in Europe. So let's turn our attention over to the UK, because the UK political scene is actually quite similar to the French in one way, although it's not as extreme, is it? We don't have such a strong right-wing party, but we do have our favourite party, UKIP, which, quite honestly, 5 years ago, I was taking it as some kind of joke. No, it's no longer a joke. These people are serious. They're here, and they've been here for a long time, and they're gaining support. What's your opinion of the UK scene?
The UK scene is very different from the French scene because, first of all, the UKIP is not a party with a record of extreme right ideology. It's not a fascist party.
Mm.
It's not the offspring of any fascist or neo-Nazi movement. And that's why the UKIP is very different from the British National Party, which today is insignificant.
Yeah.
The French National Front has its roots in history. In the traditional extreme right, Marine Le Pen is trying to change that, but she cannot change history. And, of course, in 1972, when the National Front was founded, it was an extreme right party with people who had been members of fascist movements in the 1930s and 1940s. UKIP is totally different. It can be best described, I think, as a neurosceptic, arch-conservative party made up of mostly of disgruntled members of the Conservative Party, disgruntled Conservative voters, and people who have been, many of them, members of the low-level executives of the Conservative Party and who defected on on almost a single issue, which is that of Europe. It seems to me that the decision of Prime Minister Cameron to have the Brexit referendum is mostly because UKIP has become a significant force. Yeah. And he has to do something unless UKIP grows and the Conservative Party loses seats in the next election and loses much of its impact on the political scene. Yeah. So Cameron is obliged to move to the right on Europe and also on refugees and immigration simply because of UKIP pressure.
Yes. OK, so let's move on to another part of the world, and let's not get embroiled in the geopolitical intrigues of Ukraine, but I think both of us are aware that there are what you would call fascists in Ukraine, neo-Nazi Bandera supporters, for example, which have been completely ignored by the Western media. Well, there was one article, I think, last year I read in Daily Telegraph about them 12 months ago. Do you think, you see, here again we have a situation where these things are happening, but we're not perhaps giving these events their due seriousness and worth. Do you agree?
Well, I'm totally amazed at the way most of the Western media report the situation in the Ukraine. They totally ignore the fact that in Ukraine there are, of course, people who still remind with fondness the politics of Bandera and those of the nationalist movements of the 1930s and 40s and what they did to minorities and especially to the Jews. And they tried to make us believe that, of course, Bandera was only a nationalist who was willing to have an independent Ukraine and that, of course, he had been anti-Semitic at one time, but that also he had saved some Jews and so on and so forth. But, of course, the Ukrainian right wing, or the Ukrainian fascist extreme right, that's much proper, I think, does not receive the attention it deserves from the Western media.
Yeah, I mean, imagine if they're a group of radical French supporters, you know, with connections to Nazi Germany, you know, putting off operations in the south of France or in, say, Scotland or something. I mean, our press would have a field day, wouldn't
they? There are a few French volunteers who fight along with private sector and the Azov unit in the Ukraine. So that's very few people.
Right. Okay, we've talked about three countries, your own country, France, the UK, and some events in Ukraine. In all of those three countries, we do see a swing to the right for one reason or another, but mostly it's to do with migration. My final question would be, is this situation going to destabilize Europe?
The breakup of Europe, I think, is not goes. If it takes place, it will not be because of the right-wing parties, but because we have not anticipated the seriousness of the situation. We have millions of people potentially fleeing into Europe, and we are totally unable, because of the economic crisis, to find them a job and a decent home and a future in Europe. Some of them will, of course, get a job and home and find their way into Western societies. But the situation is such that today we cannot integrate so many people. And besides, is it a solution? I mean, I was in Iraqi Kurdistan in November, and I met with a lot of people in the refugee camps in Kurdistan, some of them Christians, some of them Sunni Muslims. They didn't want to come to Europe. They didn't want to be refugees in Europe. What they want is simply to go back to their towns and villages once ISIS has been crushed, and they want to resume their normal activities and go back to their jobs. So it looks like Europe does not take this into consideration and say, okay, there's war in Syria and Iraq, let's come here to Europe. When the war is over, you will come back to your country. No way. We have never seen a situation in which millions of refugees go to a foreign country and then, when the war is over, say, okay, it was nice here that we have to come back. The way Europe is enabled to, say, anticipate the situation and to give a proper diplomatic and military answer to what's taking place in Middle East is simply amazing. And the second reason why the collapse of Europe is a possibility is that when Eastern Europe integrated into the EU back in the 1990s, we didn't take into consideration the fact that they had the Eastern countries have a very different history, a very different past, and a very different vision of what is ethnicity, citizenship. the nation state and so on and so forth. And we've tried here in Western Europe to drag them into the EU, sell them the free market policies and sell them our constitutional system overnight. And I think that this is not possible. The EU had a tremendous negative impact on many people, on this economic situation of many people in Eastern Europe.
Europe just can't keep on absorbing everybody that wants to go there. OK, well, I thank you hugely, Jean-Yves Camus, for joining us today. And Jean-Yves is an associated research fellow at the Institute of Foreign Relations Strategy in Paris. It's also a postgraduate of political science from Sorbonne University in Paris. Thank you very much indeed for joining us today, Jean-Yves.
Thank you very much, and have a nice day.
And thank you, listeners, for being with us today. Goodbye.